Our speaker today is Giulia Gubitosi, who is visiting us from Rome and will speak about dimensional reduction in the sky.
Okay, thank you, Astrid. It's a pleasure to be here to present this work that I've done recently in collaboration with Giovanni Marino Camelia and Michele Arzano from Rome and João Magalhães from Imperial College. And references for what I'm going to talk about are in these papers here. So outline of my talk. I'm going first to give a brief introduction about what spectral dimension is. First in a classical case of a Riemannian manifold, and then about its generalization to quantum gravity scenarios. Then I'm going to show how spectral dimension can be related to modified dispersion relations. And I will give you a simple formula to relate properties of the modified dispersion relation with the properties of running spectral dimension. After that, I will discuss some consequences for cosmological observations using the tool of the modified dispersion relation. After that, I will show that you can indeed find cases in which running of spectral dimension to a specific value can give you a scale invariant spectrum for cosmological perturbations, plus some other nice features. After that, I will discuss the implications of the spectral dimension running for the dimensionality of momentum space. And from that, we will get some insights about what happens to gravity when this running is present. And as a last thing, I will talk about the most recent of the works that we have done, where we have shown how you can have a framework where spectral dimension runs in the ultraviolet, but you still have a relativistic theory. Okay, so this is a short introduction about spectral dimension. I don't know how much you know, so I will do this. So we have on a Riemannian manifold, we can study a heat equation for diffusion that takes this form here. And this studies the diffusion process from a point xi zero to a point xi in a time s. And this equation is valid on a Riemannian manifold. This is the heat kernel and is related to the return probability density, which gives basically the probability density of the diffusion process to go back to the starting point in a time s. And it's related to the heat kernel in this way. The general solution for the heat kernel is given by this. And sorry, I forgot to mention, this is the Laplacian that governs the Laplacian for the manifold that we are considering. So the generical solution for the heat kernel is this one, from which it is possible to write the return probability density in this way. Here, lambda j are the eigenvalues of the Laplacian that appears here. And from these, we see that the eigenvalues that contribute to the return probability density at a specific value of s are all the eigenvalues up to 1 over s. So basically, we can say that s is related to the scale that we are probing. The return probability density, it's related to the geometrical properties of the manifold over which the diffusion process is taking place. And in fact, we can write it in terms through a heat trace expansion in this way here. So S is still the diffusion time. V is the volume of the manifold that we are considering. And AN are some coefficients that are related to the properties of of curvature, Riemann tensor, etc., of the manifold. These are just the first, this is the expression for the first coefficient. The spectral dimension is defined starting from the return probability density, and it's the logarithmic derivative with respect to S of the log of the probability, the return probability density. From this expression for the probability density, we see that if the manifold is flat, then the probability density takes this form here, and the spectral dimension is equal to the dimensionality of the manifold that we are studying. Here, D is the dimensionality of the manifold. In a more generic manifold, instead, we have that the spectral dimension takes this form, where D is still the dimensionality of the manifold. And it has the following properties. So in the limit in which the diffusion time goes to zero, the spectral dimension is equal, again, to the dimensionality of the manifold. While in the limit of the diffusion time going to infinity, the spectral dimension goes to zero. And from this expression of the probability of the return probability density, we see that the slope of the spectral dimension is going to be related to the coefficients of the expansion of the heat trace expansion. So we see that what's happening here is that basically for a very small diffusion time, the manifold is equivalent to flat because we are studying it on a very small scale. And that's why we recover the result for flat space. While on the very large scales, so S going to infinity, we have that the spectral dimension is sensitive to the global properties of the manifold that we are studying. So when we want to consider not a Riemannian manifold, but some manifold that on very small scales is subject to quantum properties due to some quantum gravity theory, we expect this not to be true anymore. And in fact, it has been shown that most quantum gravity theories where when you can compute the spectral dimension, you find that the limit for S going to zero is different from the value that you would have in a classical case. So these are some nice plots that are simulation in causal dynamical triangulation in 3D. The plot on the left shows the behavior of the spectral dimension in IR, so on large scales. And you see that indeed the spectral dimension goes to zero as the scale that you are probing goes to infinity. On small scales, you have that the dimension goes to about 3, which is the dimensionality of the manifold. But then if you zoom in here and you look at smaller and smaller scales, you see that the spectral dimension starts to be sensitive to the quantum properties of space-time that you are, of the space-time that you are considering, and actually goes to a value that is lower than 3, which is the one we would have expected in a classical case. What is interesting is that in many quantum gravity theory, we have that this spectral dimension in the UV, so in the short scale limit, runs to a value of 2. This is this has been shown in CDT, in these works here, in asymptotically safe gravity in 4 dimensions here, also Rava-Lifshitz gravity in 4D and with characteristic exponent of 3 has the same property as far as spectral dimension is concerned. And a similar thing has been found to hold in loop quantum gravity. So at this point, we see that it would be interesting to study in a quite generical framework what can the implication of this running to 2 spectral dimensions be, for example, in cosmology. The reason why we want to look at cosmology is that in the early universe, we have energies such that we expect to be probing the UV regime where you see the running of the spectral dimension. To do this, we can use a simple toy model that makes use of the fact that there is a relation between dispersion relation and spectral dimension. This is shown very nicely in this paper here by Sotiriu, Visser, and Weinfurtner. So in general, we can see the dispersion relation as the momentum space representation of the Laplacian of a theory. So if we have that the dispersion relation takes this form, where f is some function of momenta, then the Laplacian, then we can say that it comes from a Laplacian of this form here. And this is the Laplacian that we can use in considering some diffusion process that is governed by this diffusion equation that is basically the same as the one that we have seen in the classical case. The only subtlety here is that before going to study the diffusion process, we have to consider the Euclidean version of the Laplacian. So you see that here I have changed the signature of the metric. Of course, this is in a flat space-time. Then the probability, the return probability density takes this form here, where here we have the dispersion relation. And the spectral dimension can be easily computed through this formula. I always forget I have this. So what we have done is we have to study to get a simple answer for the modified dispersion relation of this form. So it's basically a power law in the spatial momenta. And gamma is some parameter that we can vary to see how the spectral dimension is affected. And this is similar to the dispersion relation that you would find, for example, in Horava-Lifshitz gravity. If you compute the spectral dimension associated to this modified dispersion relation through what I've shown you in the slide before, you get this general result. Here, D is the dimensionality of the spatial momenta. And gamma is the parameter that appears here, so governs the power of the correction. These are the plots for the spectral dimension as a function of S, so not only the UV limit, in 2 cases. In blue, we have the case for gamma equal 1, so a quartic modified dispersion relation in three spatial dimensions. And in purple, I show you the case for gamma equal 2, so a sixth power of the momentum is the correction to the dispersion relation. You see that they behave nicely in the IR, and they give the correct value of 4, which matches the Hausdorff dimension of spacetime. While in the UV, they run to values that are lower than 4. And in particular, we see that in the case when gamma is equal to 2, we have that the spectral dimension is running to a value of 2 in the UV, which is the case that...
So what's the physical interpretation of those constant lambda?
Of the what?
The constant lambda.
So this is a dimensional constant that you need to put there for dimensional reasons.
Yeah,
you can see it as the scale at which the modification of the dispersion relation is starts to be relevant or something like that. But in general, it's just. I'll show you later that how it and how that can be constrained using cosmology. So we were saying that in the following, I will concentrate on a dispersion relation of this kind with gamma equal 2, because it's a nice and simple toy model that reproduces the running to two spectral dimensions that we want to investigate more. So to look at the cosmological implications for this, we will study basically the power spectrum of cosmological perturbations. So this is a slide. Everything is standard, and I only needed to set the language and to recall a few formulas that could be useful. So this is the second order action for perturbations of matter and the scalar degree of freedom of the metric. Here, this V is known as the Mukhanov variable for the perturbations. And A is the expansion factor that, for example, in the Sitter universe is an exponential function of time. We are interested in studying the properties of this perturbation variable V. So we go write down the equation of motion in Fourier space that comes directly from this action and is of this form. So we see that the equation of motion has two terms. This term here is basically a pressure term and is relevant on scales that are much smaller than the horizon. While this other term here is a term that is relevant in scales that are bigger than the horizons and is, for example, responsible for the genes instability. A simple way to compute the power spectrum of the perturbations, which is defined in this way here, k cubed times v over a squared. So a simple way to compute this power spectrum is to first write down the solution that is valid at small scales. So it's the solution basically of a harmonic oscillator. And we can write it in this way here. So this one here is a normalization factor. And this is a phase that is not going to be relevant for what we are going to do. And we also write down the solution for that is valid on large scales, which takes this form here. So we have that if we disregard this term here, V has to behave to evolve in time like the expansion factor A, and it can be multiplied by a function of the momenta. And the way to compute the solution at intermediate scales, so when we are not much smaller or larger than the horizon, is to ask that these two quantities match when omega eta, omega is the time part of the energy momentum, and eta is a conformal time. So when this omega eta is equal to 1. If we do that, we find that this function f of k has to be 1 over k to the 3 halves. And introducing this into the formula for the power spectrum, we see that the k to the 3 halves simplify with this k to the cube here. And we have that the spectrum is a scale invariant, which means that it doesn't depend on k, on the Fourier mode that we are considering. OK, this was all standard. And in the next slide, I'm going to show you how this needs to be modified when we want to introduce a modified dispersion relation for the perturbations V. So we start again from the equation of motion for the perturbations that is this one. But now we observe that here we have a C squared. And C squared is K dependent if the dispersion relation is modified. In particular, starting from the dispersion relation we have seen before with gamma equal 2, we have that in the UV, which is the regime that is of interest for us, the C is equal to lambda P squared. And so P is the physical momentum, while K is the comoving momentum. And they're related by P equal K over A. So we can write C in a K and time, because this depends on time, dependent way. Then we do what we have seen before. So we go look for the solution at small scales, so disregarding this term here. And now we have that the solution takes this form. And we see that now we have already the k to the 3/2 dependence that was critical for having a scale invariant spectrum. So what is happening is that already on scales that are inside the horizon, the power spectrum is a scale invariant. We don't need to do some matching between inside and outside to see the emergence of scale invariants. And something that is also interesting is that to do the matching before, in the standard case, we had to assume some time dependence for A. And in particular, we had to assume that A was the scale factor of the sitter spacetime. In this case, A cancels out because it appears here as well as here. So when we do the matching, it just cancels, which means that the power spectrum not only is scale invariant, but is scale invariant regardless of what the time evolution of the expansion factor is. And this is interesting. So this is nice. The problem is that we know that the power spectrum of perturbation is not exactly scale invariant. This was measured by the Planck satellite very recently, which has found that the spectral index, which would be 1 if the power spectrum was exactly scale invariant, is instead this number here. So it's 5 sigmas away from scale invariance. So if we want to still use somehow the model we were studying, we need to find a way to match this observation. And this can be done in 2 different ways. One is to assume that the coefficient gamma that was governing the power of the correction of the dispersion relation is not 2, but is slightly higher than 2. Or another way is to use a dispersion relation such that the running to dimension of 2 is very, very slow, so that when the perturbations are forming, the effective spectral dimension that they see is not 2, but is somehow bigger. So more or less, the principle is the same, but and they both work. So here I will just show you how the first case works. And the second is an extension of it. And you can look it up on the paper. So the way this works is that this is what we get, the condition that we get when we do the matching between the small scale and the large scale for the perturbation of the for the cosmological perturbation. And we have to compute this, to evaluate this at omega eta equal to 1, as I said before, which we can also write as ck eta equal to 1, with c that depends on, that is k over a, I think I forgot. Yeah, it's k over a to the gamma. Now I leave gamma generic because I want to see what happens if gamma is different than 2. What happens in this case is that the factors of the expansion factor don't cancel out. And so the solution will be dependent on the equation of state of the matter that we are considering. And which means that it will be dependent on the time dependence of the expansion factor A. And in particular, this is the generic time dependence of the expansion factor epsilon here is a parameter that is related to the equation of state. W is P over rho. So epsilon is related to the equation of state. The result from this, so using this and this condition in here, is that we have a condition relating the spectral index, the equation of state parameter, and the parameter that governs the modification of the dispersion relation. In particular, we can use the constraint from Planck to plot the allowed values of the UV value of the UV running of the spectral dimension D with respect to the value of the equation of state parameter.
Excuse me, Julia, because I'm puzzled. What has spectral, I mean, what has the story that you started with to do with this story here? Because you started discussing a property of Laplacian, and there is a spectral dimension, fine.
Yeah.
Now you're discussing essentially a cosmology with modified dispersion relation.
Yeah, because I've shown you that modified dispersion relation is the representation of momentum space of a Laplacian, and the Laplacian is related to spectral dimension.
True. But this relation is kind of superficial, isn't it?
I mean, as I told you, this is a toy model. So I wanted to have a framework where I could deal with the perturbations without me to work out the full quantum gravity.
No, I mean, my question is that I understand that you're talking about the modified dispersion relation, and there are many effects of modified dispersion relation. One of the effects is modified spectral dimension. Another effect is the story about the spectrum of fluctuation.
Yeah, later
but
I
But there are some other stories about modified dispersion relation.
Sure.
And I don't quite see a reason why you're actually mixing up these two stories here.
But what other reasons? What other stories are there that
The one story is this dimension story.
Yeah.
Spectral dimension story. And another story is the story of fluctuations the story of evolution of cosmological fluctuations. And I don't quite understand what's the relation between the two stories. I mean, of course you can represent, of course you can say that there is a relation between the modification and the...
So this is a toy model also in the sense that I'm treating the fluctuations, so I assume that they form somehow, I don't care how. I only consider them after they are formed, and I study them in a semi-classical way, because the solutions that I wrote are semi-classical approximations. But I'm still in the regime where I expect the dispersion relation, the modification of dispersion relation to be relevant, and the spectral dimension to be...
Yeah, but what is the physical reason that you want to describe fluctuations of cosmological fluctuation in terms of spectral dimension? Because that's something that they don't understand.
No, so let's say that what I want to do is to see if I can say something about what I should expect in a theory that has running of spectral dimension.
Mm.
Okay, the easiest way to do is to describe the running of the spectral dimension through a modified dispersion relation. It's one way, and it's an easy way that doesn't require to go through the whole quantum gravity theory that is producing the running.
Mm-hmm.
From that, so I know that the spectral dimension is related to this modified dispersion relation, and I want to see what happens if I put this dispersion relation in the system that I'm studying.
But what do you want to say that this fluctuation, this cosmological fluctuation, are living effectively in a space-time of two dimensions or something?
No, this is not what I'm saying yet. In a bit you will see something else, some other claim that I want to make.
Okay,
so I'm not... it's a model. A model that gives me the running I want and that allows me to treat the perturbation. That's it. And of course everything is semi-classical, so I'm not going in the...
I have a question about the matching. There's something I was missing there. In the case where you modify the dispersion relations, you're looking at the matching at omega eta equal 1, but this is a matching between far ultraviolet and far infrared.
No, so everything here, so the moment when the fluctuations cross the horizon, they are still ultraviolet, because at the time of inflation, everything, the scales are all very small. So everything is in the ultraviolet. So all during the whole process of matching, I have that I am in the UV regime of the spectral dimension. And then I have that omega times eta can be smaller, about one or bigger than one, but I'm still in the UV regime. I don't know if that's what you wanted to.
So you are never matching with the standard behavior of the P square one.
Not here. That would, I mean, when during the expansion the modes are redshifted and so on, then you eventually approach the one that is the IR regime, that is the one that is relevant for today, for example. But in the very early universe, you only care about the UV. So this is. Okay, I think we have discussed this. So this is the plot of the allowed values for the equation of state parameter as a function of the allowed values of the UV value of the spectral dimension. Another thing that we can do in looking for observational consequences of this running spectral dimension or of this modified dispersion relation is, for example, look at the amplitude of the power spectrum. So if we put all the factors, so here I was, if you put all the factors that are present in the normalization of the modes, and and you still assume that you have this modified dispersion relation with gamma equal 2, then you get that the amplitude of the spectrum that is defined in this way is equal to the ratio between the Planck length and the scale lambda that was that appears here as a correction to the as the factor that governs the correction of the dispersion relation. And we know that, this quantity is a quantity that has been measured, and we know that is of the order of 10 to the minus 5. So this would give an order of magnitude estimate for the scale lambda if we want the theory to be viable.
Where do you start with lambda p4?
Sorry?
Where do you take lambda p4?
So this is, where is it? This dispersion relation where I put gamma equal 2 because it's the case that leads to running of spectral dimension to 2 in the UV.
So if you put the natural gamma equal 1, you get the same.
If you put gamma equal 1, for the first problem is that you don't have a scale invariant spectrum, so the theory is already ruled out. Mm-hmm. So it's not really interesting.
So what would
the interesting values are gamma equal or slightly bigger than 1, because that's what matches the first thing, which is the spectrum being scale invariant.
Is there a mechanism that would, if you have perturbation that fourth order, why don't you have perturbation at second order? I know you want to match that, but
a perturbation of second, you mean the...
Well, a general expansion will contain the p square.
Yeah,
p-square.
No, but this is not a general expansion. This is an ansatz that I make. And I'm studying it in the UV, so it doesn't even make sense to do an expansion in terms of lambda p. Because what I'm interested in is the UV behavior of this. Mm-hmm. So it's not a power law expansion. It's just a toy model to be taken as it is.
So a quartic term wouldn't contribute to the...
No, because in the UV is subdominant. So it, you can put lower powers as well.
Can
the
it
important thing is that you have the sixth power as the higher power.
But can subleading term be responsible for the non-breaking of scale invariance of the spectrum?
That's not really. So you want to do for this breaking of scale invariance, so you still want to Either you want, so you want the perturbations to see a modified dispersion relation with gamma slightly bigger than one, with gamma slightly bigger than one. So either you put by hand a value of gamma that is like gamma equal 2.02 or whatever, or you modify, you write gamma as a function of momentum itself, which was the case, I keep on, which was this case that I mentioned here, so that you have running to two, but very slow, so that when at the relevant scales for the perturbations, gamma is not yet exactly two. And so what happens if you have some extra power, like p to the fourth, is the way the spectral dimension runs from four to two. So you change the slope, but you don't care about that, and it's not even clear if the full behavior of the of this spectral dimension have some physical meaning. So,
excuse me, Julia, could you actually explain this formula for the amplitude? I mean, why the Planck length
this
actually? How the Planck length actually gets to this formula?
It appears because actually I should have put it when I wrote the solution of the at small scales. When I normalize here, I should put a Planck length here. It's part of the normalization, and this you get it assuming that these fluctuations are the vacuum state of some quantum theory that is producing the fluctuations. It's just there, and the lambda comes from the C, basically.
No, that I understand.
You can work it out, and
okay, so
you'll see that okay. That it works. Another thing that you can study is the tensor to scalar ratio. So until now, I've been speaking only about the perturbation of the scalar degree of freedom of the metric. But you could also have a very similar equation for the perturbation of the non-scalar degrees of freedom. And in particular, you can assume that also these degrees of freedom have some modified dispersion, or follow some modified dispersion relation. And it doesn't need to be exactly the same as the one that holds for the scalar case.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, Julia, but I'm excited, so I'd like to understand. I mean, this result seems extremely disturbing, isn't it? Because it essentially says that you have your perturbation, I mean, you have your modified dispersion relation with a relevant scale, 5 orders of magnitude larger than Planck's.
Yeah. So, first,
I'm
not claiming that this is the true theory. I'm showing how you can match a theory with a modified dispersion relation to two observations, which is already something relevant.
Yeah.
The fact that you can actually constrain it. If I use this simple version, which, I mean, we already know that it's not exactly like this because we need to have not exactly scale invariant. Here I'm showing you a simple case. In this simple case, you get this constraint. But I don't want to make a philosophy out of here. It's just, I mean, what is relevant is that you can constrain this theory. And I'm showing you how you can do it. Then you can choose some dispersion relation or something that is more physically relevant, and then you know how to work out constraints. So the other way that you can constrain is you can constrain the ratio between the speed of the scalar perturbations and the speed of the tensor perturbations. If the ratio is given by this, here I'm not giving you the details, I'm just showing you how they are related to observable quantities. So if the ratio between the two speeds is b, then you have the tensor to scalar ratio, that is this famous variable r, that is defined as the ratio between the amplitude of the two spectra, is equal to b. And we know that this r, it has been already constrained to be smaller than 0.1, which would imply that b is smaller than 0.1, and so that the speed of the tensor perturbations would need to be smaller than the speed of the scalar perturbations. Okay, now that we have done this, we want to get some more insight about so what you were worried about what's actually happening. You were asking if I was claiming that the actual dimension of space-time is running to 2 or whatever. And now I'm going to show you that what you can actually see is that not the the Hausdorff dimension of space-time is running to 2, but the Hausdorff dimension of momentum space. And this, you see it in this way. So you start again with your toy model dispersion relation. You go to some variables that make the dispersion relation trivial, like this. And you're only interested in the UV behavior. So you are interested in P tilde equal P times lambda P to the gamma. Of course, when you do this change of variable, you need to change accordingly the measure on momentum space that was appearing, for example, in the action for the perturbation. No, not in this one, in the Fourier one. I didn't write it, sorry. But you need to change the measure of the accordingly. And this is how it changes under these change of variables. What happens is that now you have a trivial dispersion relation and the modified measure, and you see that this is the measure that you would have in a momentum space with dimension d minus 1 minus gamma over 1 plus gamma plus 1 plus 1, which is the extra energy dimension. So you have that in these variables, the Hausdorff dimension of momentum space is given by this formula. And this formula is exactly the one that was describing the UV value of the spectral dimension as a function of the number of spatial dimensions and the coefficient gamma.
How do you define this dimension of momentum space?
I'm just looking at the measure, so you know that in a d plus 1, in a d-dimensional measure, sorry, in a d-dimensional space, mm-hmm. you can write the measure.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's just that I'm not doing anything. And instead of d minus 1, you have this. So you have some, this you equal to d star minus 1, you get d star. And this is the dimensionality of the spatial part of the momentum. You add the dimension related to the energy part, and you get this. So this is already intriguing as it is, but it's even nicer to look at how the action and equation of motion for the perturbations look like when I do this change of variable, which is what I'm going to show you here. So we start again for the quadratic action for the perturbations. This time I use the variable z that is just equal to v over a. So it's the same, and a appears here. And this is already in Fourier space. Now I change variables in such a way that the comoving momentum k has a trivial dispersion relation, which means that I define a k tilde in this way, and I accordingly change the measure here, in this way here. And so this is how the action in these new variables looks like. And you see that now instead of speed c that was equal to k over a to the gamma, I have an effective speed, c square, that is a to the minus gamma. So I still have a time dependence of the speed, even if I have a trivial dispersion relation for the comoving momenta. To eliminate also this non-triviality here in the action, I can just redefine the units of time. And what I finally get after this redefinition is this, where z is a function of the expansion factor and gamma. So now that I have written basically the action in a canonical form, but with some deformed measure. So I can write the equation of motion for perturbations, not that I go back to the V variable, which now takes this form. But here, instead of second derivative of A with respect to time over A, I have a second derivative of Z with respect to the rescaled time over Z. And what happens is that in these units, when I put gamma equal to 2, here you see that Z becomes a constant equal to 1. So basically, the term that is a response that is sensitive to the expansion just cancels out. And I get only the equation for a harmonic oscillator. So what is basically happening is that in these units where the dispersion relation is trivial, but and all the deformation is in the measure, I have that the perturbations are basically the ones that you would have in a, in a theory where matter is conformally coupled to gravity, so that it's not sensitive to the expansion, because FRW is conformally equivalent to Minkowski. And this is, this is intriguing because you have that this running of spectral dimension to 2 is related to a running of the Hausdorff dimension of momentum space to 2, and this is related to gravity becoming conformal. So this, I would say that is worth investigating more. After all this, you got a couple of bonus slides that are related to the last work that we had done, that we put on the archive a week ago, that is related to the following issue. So now we have, now we have modeled the running of the spectral dimension through a dispersion relation that is, of course, non-relativistic because it's not invariant under standard Lorentz symmetries. And plus, we have this thing of the dimensional reduction of momentum space that, of course, puts the symmetries of the moment of the theory under asks for putting the symmetries of the theory under scrutiny because we don't know what's going to happen to them when the dimensional reduction happens. The way out, plus there is also the thing that in the theories, in the quantum gravity theories where this running of the spectral dimension happens, it's also not clear what's going on with the relativistic symmetries, apart from the Horava-Lifshitz case where the symmetries are broken. And in fact, there you have a dispersion relation of the kind that we have seen, similar to it. The way out of this is to use the interplay between the modified dispersion relation and the measure on momentum space to build something that is invariant under that is relativistic and see what happens there to the spectral dimension. For example, we might wonder if no running is possible if we start with a relativist, if we want to have a relativistic theory. The way that we have used to investigate all these issues was to relate on a theory that we on momentum space that we know being relativistic, which is a theory with a curved momentum space with the Sitter metric on the momentum space. We know that this theory is relativistic because it has the same number of isometries as Minkowski. So, and this has been studied in the literature, so it's a well-established thing. Of course, I'm going to show you the Euclidean version of the theory because that's what we need for the spectral dimension. And so the measure in this theory is, of course, the square root of the determinant of the metric times d3p in three dimensions that takes this form if the metric is the sitter on momentum space. The Laplacian has to be built with some quantity that is known to be invariant under the symmetries of this theory. The symmetries of, this theory are not the standard Lorentz transformations, but are some deformation of the Lorentz transformations. And this is also a well-known result that the scalar invariant of the theory has this form here. So this is what we can use for the dispersion relation. And at this point, we have the ingredients to build a probability, a return probability density using some function of this Casimir of the theory as the momentum space representation of the Laplacian, and introducing the appropriate measure so that everything is invariant under the deformed Lorentz symmetries.
Why are you using the second term in the Laplacian? This all L2 to gamma?
This is a correction that I can put and I put.
Well, you can put, but why?
Because it's possible, I do it, and I will show you in a bit why it was good to do it.
Excuse me, one thing. Isn't the Euclidean version of the sitter space just a sphere?
No, so when you do the Euclidean thing, you have to also, the prescription is that you also have to, so if E goes to IE, also the scale L has to go to IL. That's the prescription.
No, it's not. It's hyperboloid. You know, the
sphere would be anti-de Sitter.
It's something like the, if you remember this picture of the sitter like this, this is the Lorentzian de Sitter, and the Euclidean de Sitter is kind of hyperboloid.
No, yeah, I think you're confused.
Because it's negatively curved in the Euclidean. Okay.
I think you were thinking about anti-de Sitter, that is a sphere in after Euclideanization.
So topologically, it's still non-compact.
Okay, so we have these. We can do the same things that we have seen before, which is study, instead of studying directly the spectral dimension, and we have done also that, but here I'm going to show you this because it's easier. But we have shown that this is equivalent to computing the spectral dimension. What we are doing here, what I'm showing you here, is just a change of variable such that the dispersion relation becomes trivial, and all the non-trivial effects are gathered into the measure. I'm only interested in the UV behavior, so I can do a quite simple change of variable, which is E tilde equal E to the L E divided by 2 over L, and P tilde equal this, and then I go on not spherical coordinates, but okay.
Polar.
I was missing the word. I go to polar coordinates. So P tilde is R sin theta, and E tilde is R cos theta. In these variables, the return probability density takes this form. We still have R to some power here, and we want to remove also this because we want to have a completely trivial dispersion relation appearing here. So we just do another change of variable of this kind. We and we write the return probability density. Now we see that here we have the standard we have a standard dispersion relation, and we know that in that case the dispersion, the UV value of the spectral dimension is just given by the dimensionality of the space, which in these variables is given by this, can be read out from here. And in the case of a 3 plus 1 space, we have that is equivalent to this. So we see that also here the gamma equal 2 has a special role, because in that case we have that the spectral dimension is again running to this interesting value of 2. So we have shown that the theory doesn't need to break symmetries to have a running of the dimension, but you can have a relativistic theory that does it. Now, of course, what is interesting is to check if all this has the same interesting consequences as far as cosmology is concerned.
If gamma is equal 0, we get dimension 6.
If gamma is equal, yeah, and in fact, it runs to a value higher than the dimensionality. It's like if you were studying a super diffusive process or something. And I think this is not the only case where you have these kind of things. There was some work by Astrid you were mentioning, where you had the running of spectral dimension to values higher than 4 in 4 dimensions, right? So it's, I mean, it can happen. It's not the theory, it's not this theory that is sick. It's, okay, so this was my last slide. And since almost 1 hour is gone, I leave you here with my conclusions. And thank you.
Thank you. Questions? So let me start with one. So you've always shown the return probability.
Yeah.
So in all these cases, have you looked at the probability density, not just the return probability? Because
no.
What usually happens when you do these higher derivatives is that the probability density becomes negative in some places, which means the whole interpretation of this diffusion process completely breaks down.
Yeah, that's what I know.
So it's not really clear to me. For example, what you were doing on your last slide seems to be affected by that. So.
Yeah, so here, now we were interested only in the UV behavior of the spectral dimension. We didn't check if all the diffusion process was well defined. But,
if you have the spectral dimension which you derive from a diffusion process, which is not a diffusion process because the equation.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it's just. I mean, at that point, we are just using the mathematical formalism, and we don't care about.
There's one technical point. She has no higher time derivatives. She just has higher space derivatives.
No, but for example, if you look at the Hojava-Lipschitz diffusion equation, the one that you are showing in the beginning, where you don't have higher time derivatives, but you have higher spatial derivatives. If you just look at the full profile for the probability density, it's not positive semi-definite, which means it doesn't have a useful definition as a probability density, which means that you cannot really say that this quantity that you're deriving is the spectral dimension.
But wasn't there some work in which, maybe it was you and
yes,
Gianluca,
that's what I'm asking.
That weren't you showing like a way to extend the definition in such a way that the probability density is well-defined and you still keep the same behavior in the UV?
Yeah, so you can find cases where you can modify the diffusion equation in such a way that you do have a well-defined diffusion process, and you get the same result for the spectral dimension. For example, in the case of asymptotic safety, this is what happens. But it's not guaranteed that you can do that any of those cases.
I mean,
cases
that's also something that is worth checking. But we were, what made us feel safe was that we were interested in the UV behavior that doesn't look to be affected by the redefinition of the probability density and so on that you need to make it well defined.
Further questions? Okay, well, if that's not the case, then thanks to Matteo, we can have a discussion over some cookies. And let's thank our speaker again.